Sultan, how are you?
I'm well, Andy. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So, at what age did you start playing bass? Because I'm a musician. I started a little late. I think I was 16 when I actually picked up the drumsticks. But I think you were a little younger, weren't you?
When I started playing bass, I was about either 13, probably 13, 14, something like
okay.
that.
Was that your first instrument?
No, I was a guitar player initially. And the only reason I picked up a bass was because these two hotshot guitar players from Brooklyn moved onto Staten Island, where I lived. And I wanted to play in a band with them, but they didn't need another guitar player. They needed a bass player. So they said, well, you can be in the band, but you have to be the bass player. So I sold the guitar that my dad had bought me for Christmas, a few Christmases before that, and bought a bass and started playing.
So you actually you picked your instrument out of what was practical, basically.
Out of need, out of necessity, not so much out of desire.
I remember a guy who, I remember a band that I read about where they picked their instruments based on what costed what in relation to who could
what
afford.
What cost what?
Like, which guy had the most money, bought the most expensive instrument, and they just found instruments they could afford, and they started playing them. It was an interesting attitude towards music.
Yeah, monetarily didn't have much to do with it money-wise, but... it was just a simple fact of playing with better musicians than I had been playing with at that time.
Yeah. And where'd you get your drummer for this band?
Well, they already had a drummer. It was all Staten Island kids, you know, from high school. And this guy named the drummer's name was Tommy Simonelli. I'll never forget it. He was the drummer for a while. Actually, that's not true. It started off that the drummer in that band was one of my closest friends. His name is Tommy Price, and Tommy was the original drummer in that band. Tommy plays with, who used to play with Billy Idol and Willie DeVille, Mink DeVille, and most recently Joan Jett. He's been with Joan for about 20 years now. And then he wound up getting fired for some unknown reason, and then they got this other guy, Tommy Simonelli, in.
I found the drummers were usually the guys who had the biggest basement.
No, actually, the guitar players had the rehearsal space, which was the basement.
I think that's why I became a drummer, because I had a basement we could actually play in.
Yeah. Well, I did the same thing in my house, and it was funny, too, because my everything was plugged into one socket. All the amplifiers, the PA, you know, lights and stuff like that, was all plugged into one socket. And if the band got too loud, my mom would flick the basement light switch on and off. But what she didn't realize was that she was turning the band on and off and on and off. So it was pretty funny when we got too loud. All of a sudden it would stop because my mom would flick the light switch that everything was plugged into.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I got flicked as well.
You
as
did.
A youth.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't turn all the equipment off, I don't think, but my mom was not adverse to a little flicking.
Yeah.
So that was your first band. Did you guys have a name, or what was this called?
What was the name of that band? I think, I want to say it was called The Rats, but I'm not entirely sure. I don't remember. That wasn't my first band, so I don't
And
really.
It wasn't The Good Rats?
No, it was not The Good Rats. It was before The Good Rats. We were The Rats. We were just The Rats.
Okay. And like, what was your first time on stage like? Can you remember that? Because I always find that interesting.
Well, I mean, do you mean professionally or...
it was the first time you got on stage and played music.
Well, I guess what I... the first time that I ever really played for an audience, it wasn't necessarily on a stage. It was... I had gotten the idea from this kid who was up the block, lived up the block from me, where I grew up, and he was charging 25 cents for all the kids in the neighborhood to come and watch him practice in his garage.
And kids were going for this?
Absolutely. I did. I spent my 25 cents.
Was this guy really good, I guess?
Probably not. No, he probably wasn't very good, but he would sit there
with a businessman.
Yeah, exactly.
Is this Sid Bernstein, by the way?
I'm sure he's probably very well off these days. But in any case, I got the idea of doing that from him. So I said, well, if he can do it, then I can do it too. And I charge kids 25 cents to come and watch me practice too. So I guess that was my first my first audience.
We had a whole band together and let all the kids in the neighborhood come for free. What kind of businessman was I? No wonder we never got anywhere. They trusted the business.
You should have spoken to me. I would have set you straight.
All right. Well, that's good to know. So who would you say some of your musical influences were growing up? Like who, I guess your first interest was really guitar, but either guitar, bass, like who made you say, I want to be a musician?
Oh, you know, I mean, like everybody, or most people around my age, I was home in my TV room at my parents' house in February of 1964, and my dad had gotten us the 45 of this band called the Beatles, and they were all in the New Rage. Brought it home, played it, and said, oh, this is pretty cool. It's not Elvis Presley. It's not Bill Haley. It's not real, you know, dyed-in-the-wool rock and roll, but it's got an energy to it, and it's got a vibe to it that I've never experienced before. And then, of course, they were on Ed Sullivan that February. And when I saw Ed Sullivan that night, I remember being totally just enwrapped with... just consumed by what I was watching, and I said, that's it. That's what I'm going to be doing. I don't have to worry about going to school. I don't have to worry about doing well. I don't have to worry about listening to my parents. I don't have to worry about cutting my hair. I can just, now I'm going to become a musician. That's what I'm going to do. And I was bound and determined.
That seems to have worked out okay for you.
So, somehow, I really don't know how it's worked out, but I managed to eke out a living.
So who else really worked for you? Like, who did you listen to and say, I really love these guys, I want to be like this?
Well, after that, that was the beginning of the British invasion to this country. So there was a bunch of other musicians and artists that came through a couple of years after the Beatles, like 1965, 66, when we had not just the Rolling Stones, but this plethora of British music coming in, like... bands like the Small Faces, the Yardbirds, Cream, the Who, and so that was a bit heavier than the Beatles. So it really it kind of broadened my horizons to what kind of music I was listening to and what kind of music had influence on me. And I really I enjoyed like Jeff Beck and stuff like that, and rather than go entirely the pop route, I was really taken by how these bands were putting music together and stuff like that. And a little bit later on, it was Led Zeppelin. And
right. Now, I mean, not everyone who's listening to us knows, but you played with a lot of big people. I know you played with obviously Todd Rundgren's Utopia. And Meatloaf on the Bad Out of Hell album, and with, I believe, Alice Cooper, too, at some point.
Yeah, Alice. So, I did a movie with Alice.
Right, we'll get into all that. I just wanted to give people a sense of some of the people you played with. But the people that you considered influential on the way up, did you ever actually get to play with any of them?
Yeah, I've worked with Ringo, I've worked with Robert Plant, and I've worked with... Mick Jagger, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah,
just to name a few, I can't really. I'm surprised I have any brain cells left at all. But
that was kind of cool. Liberty, who I've had on a few times. The Beatles were his big influence, mm-hmm. and he ended up playing with McCartney. So I was wondering, and you got to play with Ringo, so that's similar.
Mm-hmm.
What was he like to work with?
Ringo's great. We did a Jerry Lewis telethon together, where Utopia, the band that I was in at the time, was the house band for that particular Labor Day weekend. And they had a bunch of musicians coming in and out, and we as a band, Utopia, would play behind all these individual artists. And then there was a big jam session at the end of the night, and on stage was, Utopia, and then was Bill Wyman, Kiki D, who was a singer with Elton John.
I got the music in there.
Yeah. Dave Kershaw, violin player, Spencer Davis from the Spencer Davis Band, Rick Derringer, and Ringo. Ringo played drums along with the drummer in Utopia. And we did stuff like Jumpin' Jack Flash and, I don't know what other songs. We just like All Right Now or something like that. And it's funny, too, because when we asked Ringo what songs he wanted to do, he said, anything but a shuffle. Because I guess most of the Beatles songs are like shuffles. He just was so sick and tired of playing shuffles at that time. Because the Beatles had only been broken up at that point for about 7 or 8 years.
Now, you played with an interesting person by the name of Cherry Vanilla back in the old days. So tell us a little about that.
Well, Cherry was, she was a real unique character. She was a rock, kind of a rock poetress, publicist, writer, singer, songwriter. And she introduced me, when I got into her band, she introduced me to a whole group of people that I would never have gotten to meet had I not been involved with her. She was very close friends with people like Debbie Harry, Patti Smith, all the people from Main Man Records, which was David Bowie's record label at the time in the early 70s. So I got to meet all these people, and it was, you know, it was really good for me.
Yeah, that was kind of a very decadent group, huh? You must have played some interesting shows with her.
Well, we would play in Manhattan. Like I mentioned to you before, we played at a place called Trudy Heller's, which was on 6th Avenue and 9th Street. We used to play at Max's Kansas City. And a bunch of Reno Sweeney's, which was a club down in the Village that everybody played at the time. And she's great. You know, I love Cherry. And if it wasn't for her, I would not have the career that I have today.
Okay, that's interesting.
And actually, I just as an aside, just to mention, she's written a book, too, that's due out this November. It's called Lick Me. So if anybody's interested in hearing about the stories that she has to tell, and she's got tons and tons of great stories, you should check out the book. I know it's available on Amazon.com as a pre-order.
Have Cherry get in touch with me. We'll bring her on the show. That would be fun.
Sure. Well, you know what? She'll be in town in November. I'll mention it to her.
Okay. Now, obviously, one of the big parts of your career was Todd Rundgren.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did you get connected with him?
Well, actually, it was through Cherry. Through Cherry Vanilla, I managed to become friends with people like Mick Ronson and a guy by the name of Michael Kamen. Mick Ronson was David Bowie's guitar player in The Spiders from Mars, and he and I were pretty good friends. I mean, I was a kid, you know. I was only 18, 19 years old at the time. And Michael Kamen, who unfortunately is not with us any longer, but he was a brilliant composer and musician, was the musical director for the Diamond Dogs tour, David Bowie and the Diamond Dogs. And she was close with Michael, so I was playing piano with Cherry, and she asked Michael if he would give me a few lessons. Went over to Michael's house, and Michael took a shine to me, so we became friends. And and then through a series of events, I grew up and lived very close to Earl Slick, who was David Bowie's guitar player. And when I was a kid, when I was my 14, 15, 16, we used to go see the band, this band called Mack Truck, and Earl Slick was the guitar player in Mack Truck. And we used to say, geez, if we could only be like that when we grow up. I want to be like that. You know, I want to be admired and loved and have fans. And so Slick knew who I was. So Mike, I know it's a very, very convoluted story, but this is the way it happened. I went to with a friend to drive Slick to the airport, to drive him to JFK one night. And when I went into his house to pick him up, he said, do you feel like playing bass for Todd Rundgren? Because he knew me as a bass player, and I said, yeah, sure, why not? I'll do it. He said, well, call Michael Kamen up and tell him that you are interested. I got to the airport, dropped a quarter in a payphone, dialed Michael Kamen's number, got him on the phone, told him, I said, I heard Todd's looking for a bass player. Could you recommend me? Michael said, absolutely. I don't even know that you play bass, but I'll recommend you hands down anyway. And the next day, I was on a Trailways bus up to Woodstock to audition.
All right, we're going to hear about how all that worked out and hear if you passed the audition when we get back from this commercial message. We'll be right back.